You are listening to National Security Law Today.
Welcome to National Security Law Today, the podcast of the Standing Committee on Law and National Security. I'm Elisa Poteet, always here in my individual capacity and quite hoarse tonight. Yep, I got that flu flying around Washington. As we record this evening, the United States Department of War, as it is calling itself, which is, by the way, still named the U.S. Department of Defense, it's in a historic standoff with what is arguably the better of the frontier AI companies, in my opinion, and that is Anthropic. And this standoff is over how its already integrated products can be used by the Department of Defense. Now, among the threats by Secretary of War, he styles himself, Pete Hegseth, is that Anthropic would be banished from any government contracts or use, as well as any companies using its products. Now, originally, the threat was that they would use the Defense Production Act in order to acquire Anthropic's products for use by the Department of Defense, Department of War. However, that seems to have shifted. Now they are saying that they're banning it. And as of this recording, in my opinion, it's not clear who will blink first or whether the Pentagon will really settle for OpenAI's ChatGPT, a model that has shown less efficacy and has more problems than Anthropic's. You heard from Karen Howe, author of Empire AI, on this podcast, and she gave you a lot of information about the inferior data set used to feed ChatGPT versus Daria Amodai's Anthropic. But here to talk about this standoff, the laws that might apply or that they tried to use, and whether this is an invented conflict is Alan Rosenstein, associate professor of law at the University of Minnesota and research director at Lawfare. Thanks for coming in, Alan.
Thanks for having me.
Let's just kind of frame this a little bit. For our listeners who may be aware there's some controversy but unclear on the details, explain what happened between Anthropic and the Department of War, as they're now calling themselves.
I will join you in calling them the Department of Defense, which after all is their congressionally mandated name. So it might be helpful to back up just a little bit and provide some context. For some time now, actually, I think back in the Biden administration, but then more recently now in the second Trump administration, Anthropic has been integrating itself fairly closely with the military. It's as of now, or at least as of until recently, the only frontier model to operate on the military's classified systems, an arrangement that it has through Palantir. Its latest contract, as far as we know, was signed over the summer, and that contract included several limitations, contractual limitations, on how Claude could be used in the military. And in particular, it limited how Claude could be used for domestic surveillance of Americans, and it limited how Claude could be used for fully autonomous weapons. Fast forward to January, when Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth set out a memo outlining a new approach that the military would have with respect to AI. And as part of that, he said that from now on, all contracts with AI companies must be for, quote, all lawful uses, which is to say that if an AI company wants to sell its products to the military, it has to be willing for those products to be used however the military wants them to be used, under obviously the military's own legal obligations. Shortly thereafter, Anthropic was used, or around that time, Anthropic was used in the successful capture of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. There's some dispute about what happened afterwards, but it seems to be that perhaps someone from Anthropic had some questions for someone at Palantir about how its model was used. That got to the Pentagon, and that set off a chain of events and reactions, overreactions perhaps, about whether Anthropic was trying to meddle in how the military could use Claude. Over the last few weeks, there's been a set of negotiations where Secretary Hegseth wants Anthropic to eliminate all of its contractual use restrictions. Anthropic wants to preserve them. And particularly last week, things got very tense. Hegseth started threatening to invoke the Defense Production Act to force Anthropic to provide its models without contractual use restrictions. But in the end, what actually ended up happening was on Friday, shortly after Donald Trump issued a very critical post banning Anthropic from being used in any government agency, Hegseth issued a post on X, formerly Twitter, purporting to designate Anthropic as a supply chain risk, which would, in Hegseth's view, and we can get into whether that actually is held up by the law, in Hegseth's view, not only ban Anthropic from DoD contracts, but would also ban any defense contractor from having, quote, any commercial relationship with Anthropic, which in the most extreme case would not only prevent Anthropic's enterprise clients who are defense contractors from using Claude in non-defense work, but would even prevent companies like Google and Amazon, which provide Anthropic with a lot of its cloud compute, from providing that compute, which would effectively end the company as we know it. So as of now, recording on Tuesday night, it's unclear whether the designation has been formally made. Anthropic has vowed to sue in court if they are designated, but right now we're in a little bit of a holding pattern and the ball is in the Pentagon's court, as it were.
I mean, I don't know about you, but that is the most extreme reaction to a U.S. domestic company with a product that's demonstrated high efficacy that I've ever heard of, that doesn't have like a Chinese component or something that is quite obviously a problem. And what it says to me is they really want it.
Certainly the fact that they were threatening to use the Defense Production Act suggests they really want it. And not only that, but a few hours after Hegseth went on X to designate Anthropic as a supply chain risk, the US went to war with Iran. And apparently Claude's systems were used in that and are continuing to be used as far as we know. It's also worth adding that although Hegseth has, again, designated, or at least said he's going to designate Claude as supply chain risk, he's also said that Anthropic will have 6 months to offboard its systems. So you have a very strange situation where the government is simultaneously saying, this thing is so good that we are going to threaten to use the Defense Production Act to make you sell it to us. It's so safe that we're going to use it in active military operations. It's so dangerous that we're going to ban it and also burn you to the ground, Anthropic. But also we're going to give you 6 months. Not all of those things can be true at the same time.
Yeah, I think they're going to have some issues there. But let's sort of unpack this for people who don't quite understand different types of AI. We use that term very generically, but what is it the Pentagon wants here? Because Anthropic is well known for its large language model, Claude. But is that what they're using here, is just an LLM? Or is this some sort of artificial general intelligence or some other kind of model that is important to the Pentagon?
So I don't think we have visibility into that. The specific details of what Anthropic is doing for the Pentagon is not clear. My understanding is that primarily they're using their frontier model, which is Claude. Now, Claude is a large language model, but it's best not to get too focused on the word language there. These are general purpose prediction, synthesis, and reasoning engines that can be embedded in a wide variety of applications. They can input and output text, but they're also multimodal, which means they can input video, audio, really anything that can be digitized. The Pentagon can use them to make PowerPoints, but it can also be used to create automated targeting decisions and battlefield and analysis and a variety of other uses. Now, what's not clear is what version of Claude is being deployed in the Pentagon. So you know, I use Claude, I pay my $20 a month. I use Opus 4.6, that's the latest available version for public use. It's not clear whether that is the precise version that's being used in the Pentagon. They may have a more advanced version. They may have a version that has been trained somewhat differently so as to have, let's say, fewer safeguards, right? If I ask Claude to do a targeting analysis of Iranian weapons facilities, it'll probably say no, whereas presumably the version in the Pentagon will happily oblige. But my understanding is that it's some version of Claude that is being used for some variety of uses.
Let me move on for just a second, because I want to understand why letting the Department of Defense slash War use it in compliance with all existing laws would be a problem. And I say this because there are no shortage of laws that apply to tools that are procured by the Department of Defense. In fact, some people have described it as a tangled mess, detailed, you know, cumbersome. So what would be the issue here?
From Anthropic's perspective, the issue is that there are plenty of things that are lawful under U.S. law for the military to do that Anthropic would nevertheless not want to do because of its own commitments and principles. So there's plenty of surveillance activities, we might call them mass surveillance activities, that are lawful under U.S. law, whether it's domestic surveillance or foreign surveillance, that Anthropic just doesn't want anything to do with. Similarly, autonomous weapons are not prohibited under US law. There is a DoD policy directive that limits their use somewhat, but that's just a policy directive and it is itself reasonably permissive and of course could change at any moment, and Anthropic wants nothing to do with this. From Anthropic's perspective, that's the problem. Now, this raises a broader and I think fundamentally very interesting philosophical question about to what extent should companies ever be able to dictate how the government or the military uses those products. And I think there are a wide variety of good faith positions you can take around that question. And me personally, I'm actually pretty sympathetic to the idea that if you're going to have a military industrial complex, it should be run by the military side of that hyphen, not the industrial side of that hyphen. But that is, I think, a very separate question than what we're faced with at the current moment, which is if the government cannot get a company to do business on the terms the government wants, what should the government do? It's one thing to cancel a contract or walk away or shake hands in a civilized fashion. It's another thing to do what the Pentagon is threatening to do, which is, and I want to be very clear about this, destroy Anthropic.
Yeah, which makes very little sense since they so desperately want this product and they've used it in such very sensitive and important actions lately.
So I would just say whether it makes sense or not, I think the bigger problem is that it's both illegal and would be a giant disaster to American AI.
Rumor afoot inside the Beltway right now is that they're very much in active talks with Anthropic and trying to work things out. So whether that's true or not, I don't know, but it will be interesting to see because I don't understand some of this. Let's go back for just a second, though. I don't want to get off this. Before we go forward, the original goal here was to use the Defense Production Act. Why don't you explain to our listeners who may be a little bit less initiated, what exactly is the DPA or Defense Production Act, and give us a little history on its use over time and more recently that might be familiar to our listeners?
So the origin of this is with World War II, when famously the American economy did a mass mobilization, basically the last time in history we've had a real command war economy. You know, GM would start building airplanes instead of cars, and, you know, factories that would make nylon stockings would start making nylon parachutes. And this was done through a set of sort of ad hoc arrangements, some voluntary, some a little less voluntary, between FDR and his White House and industry. And after World War II, there was a brief interregnum, but then we could have got into the Korean War. And Congress realized that we needed to continue these authorities in some way. We needed to be able to continue allowing the government to sort of turn the economy into a military economy, at least in some respect. But then you had to regularize this a little bit. You didn't want to just do this kind of in an ad hoc fashion. So the Congress passed the Defense Production Act. Now, the Defense Production Act has been reauthorized something like 40 or 50 times at this point. It has very short sunset clauses, so it has to constantly be reauthorized. And although initially it applied largely to physical material, steel and things of that nature, 15 or 20 years ago, Congress amended it to make clear that it also applied to technology and technology services. So although the Defense Production Act is a Korean War era statute, it is still very much a live statute, and it is still one that Congress has thought about recently, and it definitely applies as a general matter to technology. And it also applies to AI, and we know that because during the Biden administration, when Biden issued his executive order, part of that executive order required Frontier AI Labs to disclose information, and Biden actually invoked the Defense Production Act, a different part of it than the one Hegseth was threatening, to do that. So I think there's a decent consensus that the Defense Production Act applies in theory to AI. The question is, well, what does it allow the government to do? The core part of the Defense Production Act, Title I as it's called, allows the government to jump the queue when it comes to its contracts. So the classic example is the government has contracted with a steel mill for a bunch of steel, but the steel mill has other civilian customers. The government can come in and say, you will fulfill our steel mill contracts before you fulfill other steel mill contracts, which makes a certain amount of sense. And the Defense Production Act is actually used for that purpose all the time. I think it was even used during COVID in certain ways to sort of fast track the production of masks and things of that nature. But the rest of Title I is a little more coercive, and it allows the government to force companies to enter into new contracts with the government for services they're already providing on the public market. And in the most extreme case, though there's some debate about this, and my understanding is that you had Judge Baker on the podcast some time ago, the former chief judge of the military court, currently a law professor at Syracuse, who wrote a really fabulous article about the DPA a few years ago. The most extreme reading of the DPA is that it allows the government to require companies to enter into contracts to build new things, things that they would not already do. Though again, whether that's really supportable is somewhat contested. So what I think most people, myself included, thought last week was that what Hegseth was going to do is he's going to invoke the Defense Production Act, or Trump would, and force Anthropic to sell Claude to the government, but on a different contractual basis. Maybe in the extreme, he'd even force Anthropic to tweak Claude, retrain it a little bit. But at the very least, he would get Claude with a different contract. And although that would, I think, as a policy matter, not be a great idea, and although that would not be legally entirely uncontroversial, there would be a pretty strong argument that the government could do this. For whatever reason, and this is still not entirely clear why, Perhaps because that was not viewed as punitive enough. It did not send a strong enough signal. The government chose not to do that and instead invoke a totally different, much newer, much less tested, and much more legally dubious supply chain risk designation.
And so let's also explain to our listeners, there have been EOs discussing supply chain and other issues. What law would govern in a situation where there's a supply chain issue? And also, I know this seems obvious to us, Alan, but what about explaining just what is a supply chain issue in the first place?
Sure. So let me do that by explaining the law that is at issue here, because I think it actually makes a lot of sense in its intended application, even if it doesn't make sense in this application. So in 2011, Congress passed, as part of the National Defense Authorization Act, what is currently located at 10 U.S.C. 3252. And that gave the Secretary of Defense the power, with some very minimal findings and procedural protections, to designate a company as a quote-unquote supply chain risk. And with that designation, certain things happen. Specifically, that company cannot do business with the military and government contracts, and no one who does business with the military and government contracts can use that company in those contracts. So what was Congress thinking about at the time? Well, in the 2010s, when Congress passed this law, and then there's another sort of similar law that Congress passed that's not at issue here, but it gets at a similar idea. Congress was facing the fact that, in particular, the information technology supply chain was becoming more and more globalized. And a lot of components were coming sometimes from Russia, but increasingly, in particular, coming from China. And so the two examples here are the companies Huawei and the companies ZTE. And these are two producers of very high-end, I mean, very high-quality, industry-leading telecommunications. So these are the sort of like telecommunications switches that, you know, the internet runs on and that, you know, military communications might run on.
And the 5G technology that was being embraced at the time. And they, of course, make most of our internet routers, quite frankly.
Exactly. And at the time, there was a concern that these are literal supply chain risks, that you have companies, nominally private, but if they're in China, there's no such thing as truly a fully private Chinese company, subject to the influences of the Chinese Communist Party. You're selling them to the DoD. And then I don't think it takes a lot of imagination to imagine why that could potentially be a problem. And so Congress created these mechanisms by which you could identify these companies and say, we don't want you doing business with us. And equally, maybe more importantly, we don't want anyone who does business with us using your products in the supply chain, which makes a lot of sense, right? So that's a supply chain risk. That's the law that Hegseth is purportedly using here. And the disanalogies between a Chinese telecommunications company that might be surreptitiously introducing vulnerabilities and a American AI company that explicitly in a contract that this Pentagon signed 6 months ago is saying, hey, we don't want you to use this tool for these purposes. There's some pretty strong disanalogies there.
We should state the obvious because I think it's apparent to us, but the issue with Chinese technology was potential disruption and surveillance using the U.S. telecommunications backbone, right? And the Chinese had priced their products such that they were to a company that has, you know, quarterly filings and needs to demonstrate return on investment to shareholders. These things are priced low. And a lot of companies didn't really perceive the threat. Like to them, national security issues weren't sort of first and foremost. These things were cheap and reasonably well made and they slapped them into systems. Is that kind of how it went, really?
It did at the time. I want to abstract from that a little bit just to say that Whatever the details of ZTE or Huawei, the thing that Congress was concerned about, right? The reason it gave the Secretary of Defense these strong powers was because you had companies that were A, controlled by foreign adversaries, potentially, and B, we're doing things surreptitiously. So it's the combination, I think, of control by a foreign adversary and surreptitiousness that creates a supply chain risk. Neither of those two things apply in this case. Anthropic is not controlled by a foreign power, right? It is an American company with largely American investors. And whatever objections it has to the Pentagon's use of its products are not surreptitious. They're in the contract, right? If you read this law as allowing the Pentagon to essentially destroy any American company when that company does not do business on the terms the Pentagon wants, you have taken a very, very, very kind of targeted supply chain risk statute, and you have turned it into a complete revolution in American procurement law. And I will just note, we are recording this a week or a week and a half after the Supreme Court struck down many of the Trump administration's tariffs under IEEPA, the International Economic Emergencies Powers Act. And one of the arguments was this thing called the Major Questions Doctrine, where we don't take statutes and read into them incredibly broad and incredibly important powers unless Congress has articulated that, right? Congress could give the Secretary of Defense the power to destroy any American company for any reason at any time because he doesn't like them. I mean, that might raise its own constitutional due process concerns, but Congress could, in theory, try to do that. But you would think that they would actually do that explicitly. And one thing that's notable, and another reason why I think supply chain designation is so flawed legally, is that at some point Congress did actually decide to ban any company doing business with the government from having anything to do with Huawei and ZTE. But they did that as a separate law in 2019, where they very explicitly did that. So we know that Congress sometimes wants to empower, enable these secondary boycotts, and it knows how to do that. And it does that explicitly through legislation. It doesn't sneak it into some, you know, general supply chain designation statute.
Jumping back for a minute, sort of disanalogies here. One of the questions that I have is, how on earth would an American company that can't be, as far as we know, right, as far as anything public, there's no indication that it comes under any foreign control. There's no information at all that it presents any kind of a significant risk. The only thing that seems to have prompted this at all was their desire to sort of narrow the contract.
Well, so let me say two things. Just for completeness sake, it is worth noting that Anthropic has a variety of funders, and some of those funders are foreign entities. So it has large funding sources that come from Singapore, Qatar, and I think the United Arab Emirates. Now, those are passive investments, and so I don't think that creates foreign control. But in fairness, you could, I guess, point to that if you wanted to. That's not what Hegseth is pointing to. But
and
more
and I
point,
don't know what those percentages are, Alan. So if it's a situation where they really have sort of majority control of the company or not.
I'm almost positive that they don't. But I'm just saying, for the purpose of rigor, we might as well note, right, that if right. you want to criticize Anthropic for having foreign shareholders, foreign investors, you can do that if you want. On whether or not Anthropic is a supply chain risk, let's go back to the original something we talked about earlier. If you take the strong view that the military should have a largely unfettered hand in how it uses the products it contracts with, and that it should never be in a position of having to go and ask a private entity for permission to use its products in a particular thing. If you want to call that a supply chain risk, I am fine with that. If you want to conceptualize that as a bad thing that the military should not ever be in a position of having to deal with, that's fine. You can go and cancel the contract then. You can just not do business. As a narrowly legal point, because after all, we're all lawyers here, the question of does this statute allow the government to essentially destroy an American company based on this reading of what constitutes a supply chain risk, I think the answer, just based on sort of all standard, you know, theories of statute interpretation, the stuff that I teach my 1Ls in Minnesota, is no and laughably no.
Yeah, and you do raise the issue, of course, early on that, you know, we don't want private companies sort of dictating defense policy. And I think most people would look at this and say, what if it were a different kind of company and they made a different kind of claim? And they wanted to restrict use of their product in a contract. Let's say that it was a big Trump company, and this was during a Democratic administration.
Absolutely.
And they wanted to start limiting the use because their leader, and I'm making this up literally as I go along, was an evangelical Christian who didn't want certain uses of the product, even though he wanted the enterprise contract and the profits that would come from a defense contract. I wonder how we would react to that if it was an AI company.
I think the answer is pretty straightforward. I think even if you like what Anthropic is doing and you like that it's standing up to this particular administration, you always have to ask yourself, okay, what if the politics and the valences were reversed here? Which is why I think that you have to concede that the government should be able to not do business with whomever it does not want to do business with. And similarly, if you're of a conservative persuasion and you don't like Anthropic, but you like this current administration, you should also appreciate that if, you know, this plays out under a Newsom presidency or an AOC presidency or a whatever, Gretchen Whitmer presidency, you probably don't want the Pentagon to be able to destroy an American company just because it doesn't like the contract terms.
I think that's probably right. Now, I think there's also a little schadenfreude going on as this plays out right now, because a lot of these frontier AI companies, not just Anthropic, OpenAI, and even to an extent, Microsoft, these companies, when they were seeding these large language models, were clearly taking a lot of public source information that people felt like was individual intellectual property, and they were using it without the permission of the intellectual property holders. I know a couple companies had to settle with New York Times and other media outlets, and they're looking right now at this product sort of losing control into the hands of the Department of Defense. And they're looking at these companies. And I think what they're saying is, hey, you know, you guys were just vacuuming up data wherever you could find it. And now you're finding out what happens when you create this thing and you lose all control out of it. I just wonder, like, does the average person look at this and feel any sympathy for a company that finds itself in this position? I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. That's not exactly a legal question, but I think these things sometimes decide the way cases go in terms of the public perception. And sometimes those things even have an impact on how the court sort of sees a litigant.
Yeah. I mean, what Americans think about AI companies and what they think about the use of training data and what their views on copyright is, I'm not sure. It may be complicated. That's a good separate discussion to have. But I don't think the point here is that you have to feel bad for Anthropic. Like, that's not relevant here. You don't have to feel bad for Anthropic when the government is trying to destroy it illegally. Just as you don't have to feel bad for Harvard University when the government is trying to destroy it illegally. You don't have to feel bad for a bunch of really fancy DC law firms when the government is trying to destroy them illegally, right? The question of feeling bad is not the issue here. The question is, do you want to live in a world where the government can arbitrarily pick someone and destroy them? That's what matters. I don't care at all if anyone feels good or bad for Anthropic, right? What I care about is that people recognize this for what this is, which is authoritarianism. This is the government coming in and saying, you, private entity, are not behaving in the way we want you to. So instead of using appropriate legal recourse, we're just going to destroy you because we don't like you.
Well, what are your predictions about how this will play out, if you have any?
So I have pretty strong legal predictions, but I have less strong business and AI predictions, both because it's not my area of specialty, but also because I think there really is more uncertainty there. So legally, I think that if Hegseth does finally go through with this and designate Anthropic as a supply chain risk, and I should say, even that's not entirely clear. I mean, the TACO principle applies not just to Donald Trump, but to his lieutenants as well. So it's quite possible that the Pentagon is very busy with the war in Iran and, I don't know, quote unquote, forgets to sign the paperwork and decides that maybe this wasn't the best fight to pick. But let's say it does, in fact, designate Anthropic. I think Anthropic will immediately go to court. They vowed to do so. And I think they will immediately win because this whole thing is so patently illegal, what the government is doing. It is so patently beyond the authorities granted to it by Congress, not just the designation of Anthropic generally, but the idea that you're going to prevent any company that does business with the government from having any commercial relationship with Anthropic. That's just not in the statute. I don't think it'll be difficult for Anthropic to get a temporary restraining order or an injunction from a court, right? At which point all this will be paused. And I don't think that there will ever be a supply chain designation that actually sticks. On the business side, it's a little more tenuous because I think Anthropic's real concern is not so much that it's going to lose in court, but that it's going to lose in the court of not public opinion, but of enterprise opinion, which is to say that the bad vibes created by the Trump administration so pointedly singling out this one company is going to scare off at least, you know, on the margin, some amount of Anthropic's enterprise clients. And this is very, very important for Anthropic because unlike, let's say, a Google or a Meta, which basically have infinite cash machines through their other advertising business and can therefore shovel free cash flow into their AI operations, Anthropic is just Anthropic in the way that OpenAI is just OpenAI. And so if they lose even a sort of small percentage of their enterprise clients, that could meaningfully set them back in their race for whatever they're trying to do in terms of building AI. And I will just note there was a podcast recorded about a month ago where Dario Amodei said that he was very optimistic about AI, he was very optimistic about Anthropic, but that, and I'm going to paraphrase it a little bit, if there's a prolonged slowdown for 12 months, Anthropic could go bankrupt, which is a remarkable thing to say for what is, even though it's a private company, one of the biggest companies in the world already. Right? These companies, because of the insane capital outlays and operating costs, are just operating at very, very thin margins. So even a small disruption to their business can have a real, real effect. On the other hand, I will say what Anthropic is winning right now is unbelievable reputation within Silicon Valley. Anthropic, I think, has always been the place that the most ambitious and idealistic machine learning engineers want to go and work at. I think that has 10x'd. And in an industry where the only thing more valuable than compute is the very high-end human talent, right? That rare researcher who can come in and create the breakthrough that's needed to get you to the next level, being the place where everyone wants to work because not only are they brilliant and pay really high salaries, but they're good people, right? That stand up for principle. I think that's priceless. I think Anthropic will be fine, but I don't envy them right now.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know if any of them are going to be fine. And if you're interested in sort of looking at the shell game that is the money moving between various chip companies, AI companies, and so on, you can listen to our podcast with Sarah Myers-West from some months ago, where she looked at exactly how these companies are capitalized. And I take your point, Alan, that this could really put them in a situation where they could go belly up. But I'm not a betting woman. But I would say I suspect they're going to work this out because I think the product is superior. And I think they're going to have to come to some sort of agreement. And I suspect they won't be named a supply chain risk ultimately, probably because they aren't. And, you know, it's been the policy or the stated policy of this administration to make sure that we win this AI space race. And if that's the case, I think burying the most superior of these frontier models is probably not a great place to start. That's my personal opinion. But, you know, it's been great talking to you tonight, and I hope you'll come back and talk to us again in the future. And we'll all keep an eye on this. Maybe after this gets resolved, we can chat again.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening to NSLT. Be sure to subscribe to NSLT on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon. The reason we ask you to do this is it does trigger the algorithm and it elevates us in the queue, which is important, we think, because we have civil discussion here. There's no shouting. This is not clickbait, but we have the kind of conversation that we think is important, and we should be having more of that. And remember, despite all of this, one of the features of our national security is our unity. Even when we cannot agree, we can agree to listen to one another, and that's something that we stand for on this podcast. Part of that is always having difficult conversations about the possible secondary consequences of any attempt to bury a U.S. AI company that is doing quite well. In any event, we remain fortunate to live in a country with greater diversity of thought than any other, despite everything that everybody feels is going on. And that's a good thing. But we have to remain willing to engage in critical thinking and civil discourse. The writer, producer, and host of NSLT is me, Elisa Poteet. I'm always here in my individual capacity. Our editor, my co-producer, is Francis Burkham. And as ever, the tireless and amazing Holly McMahon is also co-producer of this podcast as well. Our program manager is Antasia Hawkins-Blakeney. Social media and research support comes from Alana Cooper-Smith. And of course, we're grateful to the brilliant minds of the members of the Standing Committee on Law and National Security. They pursue the good in the interest of national security without regard for politics. We'll see you next time.
The views expressed on National Security Law Today have not been approved by the House of Delegates or the Board of Governors of the American Bar Association, and this recording should not be construed as representing ABA policy.